Yeah.
And Mum wouldn't be in it.
So,
well,
where do you want us to start?
Around the world playing.
Right, you've been recorded now.
I don't care.
Okay. It's probably just better to just talk general because things pop into your mind as you go along. But,
do you want us to say all that again that we said, or will you remember?
I'll remember that.
You remember?
Yeah.
All right.
This will be interesting.
So, what I want to know, actually, it was David that asked the question. Of he's been surprised at the number of mechanics in the family because he didn't realise it went back as far as Grandpa. But do you know? Well, that's really where it would have started because cars only came out about that time.
Grandpa was self-taught.
Yeah, yeah.
Because in the 1900s there was no mechanics.
No. Mm. And where did they have a garage or did they just
Nattymuck, that's in Western Victoria.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, near Horsham.
That's what I want to know. Why did they go from one side of the state to the other?
Who
knows? Don't know. They got married at Toowoon, which is not far from Nattymuck.
Mm.
Their honeymoon was spent with M and Johnson. M, what was the guy's name?
Harold?
No. That's Uncle Harold.
Oh. Jack.
M's husband.
Was it Jack Johnson?
Jack Johnson.
That sounds familiar.
Well, it was a double wedding.
Oh, okay.
And they went to Whitecliff for their honeymoon.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, push that chair out of the way. You're talking about Gran and Grandpa.
Yeah.
Weren't they both named Margaret Walton?
No. No. Margaret Walton. Was my grandmother, and she had a step-sister by the same name who married Henry Adams, who lived at Rainbow.
I thought they had a garage at Rainbow.
They did, but they started at Nattymuck.
Okay.
They were married at Toowoon. They went to Whitecliff. Grandma was pregnant with Auntie M. They went to Bairnsdale because Grandpa's sister married Heath at Ford, Geelong. Mm. At the bike shop in Bairnsdale, the bike still on top of the shop in Bairnsdale.
Yeah, still there, I know. Right? We're saying that.
They went to Bairnsdale. That's where Auntie M was born. Uncle Bert.
Dad.
And Auntie Edna, I think that's... So
four. Auntie M is older than Dad, though.
Yeah. Auntie M's the eldest.
Yes.
Mm.
Auntie Edna must be second.
Yeah.
Mm. Uncle Bert,
Uncle
next.
Bert and then Dad. And then it was Uncle Frank and then Auntie Vesta.
They were born at Witchy Proof, I think. Those two.
Mm.
Sure they were born at Witchy Proof.
What
actually took them across to Bairnsdale? You didn't get to that.
I don't know what took them. You've got to think about this. This was horse and cart days.
Yeah, I know.
There was no transport from Toowoom in the Western Victoria to Whitecliffs. You have a look, even today in a four-wheel drive, it takes you a few days to get that far.
Yeah.
And then she was pregnant, mind you, and they came all the way from Whitecliffs to Bairnsdale. But that would have been done by train. They might have come down to Swan Hill or Echuca, caught a train and went all the way around there. Because Grandpa had a job with his brother-in-law, the guy Heath. I'm trying to remember which one he married. Mary Ann. Grandpa's sister, Mary Ann, I think. Or am I talking about the wrong person? That's why they went there. Then Heath got out of the bike shop, so Grandpa didn't have a job. Heath went to Geelong and took over the Ford dealership at Geelong. And Grandpa ended up at Camperdown, I think, I'm not positive, working for Manifold, the big property owner down there, as a, you know, engineer and all that crap, because he's a self-taught engineer. They went from there to Narimuck, where they had the garage. From there they went to Witchy Proof, Rainbow, Charlton and Bendigo. How many years they started each, I cannot tell you.
Not very long. This is what I was saying to you. The Adamses back then didn't stay in one place for very long, and that included Dad. I think the longest we ever stayed in one place was 5 years.
Yeah, it wasn't much longer.
Carradale.
That's right, because I was only 3 weeks old.
Well,
I was born in Broken Hill.
9 months later, we were in Norseman.
But they must have been in Hairsbridge for a while.
When I was 13, they were there for a while.
Why on earth did they move from West Brunswick to Strathewen?
I've got no idea.
Because the farm was nothing.
Mm. That saved my life going to Strathewen.
I know it did. I know it did. Because Mum was telling me later that you were completely up the creek. and when you went to Strathewen, you just blossomed.
Yeah.
You were out in the country.
Because you had a small school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. But you couldn't cope with lots of people. And you used to climb. Kathy used to climb at the primary school. We had these big pine trees, and she used to climb up the top.
Oh, yeah. I used to do that when I was a kid, too.
You didn't get the cuts, did you?
No. We got away with it because we had this teacher at the time who was a footballer, and every Monday morning...
David Brown.
No, another bloke, after Brown.
Oh, after him. Oh, that was after I left.
We had the Englishman. And then we had this other young bloke who was a footballer. On Monday morning, he'd always turn up late, so we'd be all, Rankins and I were up the top of these trees, and one morning he turned up on time. And
then you were up the tree.
Well, I got, at Carradale, I got six on each hand for climbing the big pine tree at Carradale. Right up the very top of it. An old Clarkie, a school house was up the hill, and he walked out onto the landing outside the side of the house. He come up and told Mum and Pop about it. He said, I looked around, and there's your boy right at the very top of it, eye to eye, about 100 yards between us. And he comes running down the path. Adam, get down! told me to go in the back room. Three on that end.
I'd do it again.
No, I go into the classroom and Margaret Dorman sniggling and carrying on. Anyway, that's all right. Done all the schoolwork, went home. We ran the cows up, milked all the cows. And we were in bed when a car came up. You remember that?
No.
The car came up the driveway. About 10 to 9.
That's late.
And who the hell was that? You know. Anyway, that's all right. So the next morning, of course, we're up at 5:30 to get the cows in and milk them and that. Come in for breakfast, and Mum said to me, "So, would you get up to school yesterday?" "Boy, what do you mean? I did my school work and all that." "Oh, we had a visitor last night." "See, I can ask you about that. Who the hell was that?" "Ernie Clark." "Oh, what were they up for?" "So I want to know how you got on milking the cows tonight." Sitting down having tea, And it suddenly dawned on him that he'd given me six on each hand and I had to milk 13 cows. I wonder how the poor little bugger got on. We didn't have any trouble.
No.
Never said a word about it. He milked the cows and they fed the pigs and all that, because the old man wasn't home, as per usual.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm happy about that. He fed and went home.
Could you pass my bag over?
They're suing people these days for getting a cut. But he never hurt me. I don't go out there killing bags.
No one ever got punished like that except you, and I don't remember anybody playing up. And then I get to high school, and go from high, and out comes these 3 foot board rulers, whacking the kids over the knuckles and throwing chalk across the room.
They used to do that at Newport.
That's funny, because I don't remember any of that at the high school. You must have been in a real bad class.
In the drawing class at Castle Main, there was 3 of them. That was the only class I can remember at Castle Main, because there were only 198 kids in the whole four forms at the tech school. And there was only these 3 kids that were in 1A that, for whatever reason, they never give trouble in the other, the workshop or the sheet metal or maths or that. It was only when we had drawing with, what's his name now? He was a member of the art gallery. And next thing, boom! Jesus, sir! He throw the dust out of me. He was a good shot, I'll tell you, he was a good shot. He always got whoever he was aiming for, he got him. And then they'd be out the front and get the cup.
We had Kevin Woodbridge in our class. Haven't him anywhere, you're always in trouble.
Anyway, we're getting off the subject.
Yeah.
We're talking about all of us.
I know, we're not talking about the family.
Oh, okay, so when we were living in Taradale,
yeah,
was Dad just basically working the farm, or was he working somewhere else?
He worked the farm maybe for 9 months or so. Mm-hmm. Then he was working, got a job because they had no money. Well, what they were doing, he was getting wood, going out and cutting logs with a 6-foot saw. That 6-foot saw.
Yeah.
He was cutting logs, and then weekends come up, we'd go out there with him. I'd be on the other end of the bloody saw, and he would never stop. So I'd let the saw go. I'd had enough. And he used to go cook at me all the time for that. So anyway, that's all right. We got enough money that we were able to buy a rotary hoe and a saw bench, a Jack Smith saw bench from Ballarat.
Mm.
And we bring the logs in on the trailer behind the old Dodge.
Yes.
And saw the wood up. We had a wood heap out the back of the house.
Yeah.
That way you couldn't see the house.
Mountain high. Yeah.
And eventually 2 or 3 guys came up from Yarraville or Spotswood with their trucks and paid him so much money and all the wood disappeared.
Mm.
And then I think he got Jack of going out and getting wood. And
we grew potatoes at one stage.
Mm-hmm. So Mum got Jack of it, wanted money, naturally. So he got a job, because he was a surveyor. I don't know whether that was a trade or whether he was self-taught, but when he was in the mine, he was a underground surveyor. How they ended up at Broken Hill was the Bendigo mine closed down, and just before Mum and Dad were to be married, he didn't have a job. And Mum swore black and blue, if they had told her parents, she wouldn't have been allowed to get married.
Yeah, that's right.
And they actually, on their wedding day, said they were going to Broken Hill for their honeymoon, but they were going there to live. And he was surveying their land further out.
Uh-huh.
Broken Hill Proprietary Limited. They had land further out, you know, how they do it these days. And it must have been 12 months later, because I was 9 months old when we went to Norseman. His boss went from Broken Hill to Norseman Mines.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they ended up in Norseman.
Because on the electoral roll it says he's a motor mechanic in Bendigo. And then on the on his marriage certificate says he's a surveyor, same year. So, it was like, how did he become a surveyor?
Well, he was, I don't know how he became a surveyor.
He never trained as a...
As far as I know, he didn't train.
He didn't train.
He picked it up. He was very good at picking things up.
The story I heard about Dad being a surveyor in the mines in Bendigo was he never used to take pen and paper underground.
Yeah,
he'd get all these figures underground in
his
head, and he'd walk up and then write it all down. And
the he was like that.
Mum told me that.
He knows.
He could remember numbers.
Anything,
he
would just remember it all.
He does that too.
Terminology got the mathematics. If they're doing work 2 years ahead of it.
That's good. That's good to see it come through the kids.
But he was very good with figures. There's no doubt about it. If he wasn't bloody good with his money, it would have been... But anyway, to be honest, I don't really know. I think he must have started off as a penciler. For the surveyor, the head surveyor. And he picked it up that well. I think that's... See, if you have a look at the surveyors, well, not so much now because they've got all the computer crap, but you have a look in the old days, say 20, 30 years ago, you see them out surveying the road or if they were surveying the property next door to you, the guy always had a notebook with him to write down figures and that.
Yeah, he used to have the other bloke, the hardest.
That's right.
He had the pad and pen and the surveyors
just yelling out the numbers. So I presume that he picked that up because he was an assistant. Because up until then, when he first went to Bendigo, as far as I know, he was a mine worker.
Right.
A digger. Because at Charlton, I don't know, he was only 23 when they got married. I don't know when they were in Charlton. I don't know what Grandpa was doing in Charlton. But Rainbow, like Natty Muck, Witcher Poo, and Rainbow, they had garages in the whole three of those places. That place at Natty Muck still standing. Brian told me it's still standing.
Was that a bike shop in Benson?
Yeah, that's right. But I don't know about the other two places. I've never stopped at either of them. I've been through the other two.
Where to Ben?
But what they did at Charlton, I've got no idea. I've got no idea where they lived in Charlton, how long they were there for, and next thing they went to Bendigo. But Grandpa, the whole three of them, Grandpa, Uncle Bert, and Dad, were all working for Bendigo Mines. But at what capacity, I've got no idea. I would think that Grandpa, with his experience, would have been in the engineering place.
Right.
Shop. He was self-taught. He made tools. I've got some of them at home.
And Dad was a good pushcart rider too, wasn't he? Grandpa.
We still got
pop. Now, we just remembered me.
Just reminded you.
Reminded me. Grandpa was a shearer earlier.
Right.
He used to ride the push bike to Queensland and come back down with the shearers.
Yeah, right.
Oh, wow. That was Grandpa.
That was Grandpa. Yeah.
Cool, that would have been a bone shaker of a bike.
Oh, you know something?
They made us tough.
What a lot of people don't know, well, you've seen the trophy.
Yeah.
That's at home. No, Dean's got it. The trophy that Pop won in 1921.
For the bike?
Yeah.
1924.
On the 17th of January.
That's why I'm going to
The
Kookaburra.
They used to race against Ockham in the Western District.
Right.
Anyway, Grandpa built, you know, the rollers that they ride on?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Grandpa built these rollers out of, I don't know, red gum or something. But Ockerman used to have a set, but they were made out of pine or something. The big difference in the weight of the timber. Anyway, Grandpa challenged Ockerman. You ride mine and I'll ride yours. And Oppy couldn't believe how heavy they were. Yeah. Grandpa killed him. Get off there, I'll ride my lot.
That boat in there,
yeah.
Didn't Grandpa make that?
As far as I know, he did.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
But
so he was pretty smart.
He was good with it. Yeah, he had wool winder. Have you got the wool
winder?
Yeah,
yes.
He made each of the girls a wool winder.
Yep, I've got that still. Yeah. I still use it.
Yeah. Don't know where the rest of them are, but anyway. Yeah, that's right. He was a shearer to start. And he was still shearing when he was going with Gran, but he gave it up when they got married because they went up to White Cliff looking for opals. But obviously never found that big one, like they all do. Yep.
Yeah, he was pretty clever.
Well, he was making, when over Tate Street, he was working with he was working with Shell in the engineering department at Tate Street.
Sorry?
When over Tate Street in Newport,
yeah.
He was working with Shell Oil.
Who was living in Tate Street?
Grandpa and Grandpa. Yeah. Ma.
Oh, okay. Have you got that one, Dave?
No,
we've got
Laurie
Street.
I know.
That's us.
You live in
Horace.
The house in Mason
Street's
still there.
Yeah. They first of all, they were living in Tate Street, which is outside the station, in Newport. And then they shifted to Mason Street. And when Uncle Jack got the job with, what's his funny name, the hardware joint in Flemington?
Morrison's? Yeah, Morrison's.
And they had an offshoot out at Doncaster, where Shopping Town is now.
Yeah.
And Granny Grandpa, no, sorry.
Uncle Jack was that
place. Yeah.
They
sit across the road on between Albert Road and our garage, Doncaster Road and Tram Road.
That's another, after they got out of the place on the other side of the road.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that. Well, Gran died from there, basically.
Grandpa died before they left Mason Street.
Grandpa was in Brunswick.
No.
He was in Brunswick.
Oh, that's right. They were in Brunswick, Catawba Grove. That's right. Yeah, they were in Catawba Grove.
In Brunswick.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to think. When they left Mason Street.
Yeah, we were living at Mount Evelyn when Grandpa died.
That's right,
we
did.
Well, we were at Tarradale when they were at Mason Street.
Yes.
They must have shifted to Mason Street just after we went to Tarradale. Because they were in Tate Street when we were in Laurie Street.
I wouldn't remember that because I was only...
I know.
When did I go to Tarradale?
1946. Yeah. Because
I went there before.
June 1946, before my 8th birthday.
Yeah. Went there before I went to school. We were in Tarradale when I started school.
I was a bugger at Newport. I wouldn't go to school. I'd go to school and walk back home.
Mum had to take you back. That's more than five. When we came up here, that's what I had to do so many times. The only way I could keep it in school was to give him 5 cents.
then 5 cents would all talk.
Yeah. I had an accident.
Did you?
No, I ended up in the children's hospital with a broken head.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I went back to school, I can't remember, it's a long time. I can't remember exactly. Must have been towards the end of the year. And how I went up another grade, I've got no idea. So I went into, what was her name, Miss Murphy's class. And we shifted to Taradale in June, I think it was, for 46. I know it's before me.
Well, I was only 3 weeks old, so that's...
Yeah, you weren't very old.
3 weeks, yeah. Because so it was the end of May, basically. Yeah,
I must remember
have been the first or second of June, basically.
Mum going cooking, Grandpa. Still remember Grandpa said, oh, but Pat, you love the house, it's a mansion. Well, honestly, other than the house that we had at Newport, which Mum bought with her bond money and her family blew the crap out of her over it, the old man never bought nothing. Mum had the money, what little she had.
Yeah.
£750 she paid for that house.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of money in those days, but it was a brand new house.
Yeah. I think that house was still there too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When we went down there. Yeah. A while ago.
Yeah. How the hell they ended up at Taradale, I've got no idea. No. All I know is that at different times, the old man wouldn't be home. This is after the war, and he was down Gippsland somewhere looking at land for what reason, I'm glad if I know. Because he was working at a munitions factory before he joined the Air Force.
Right.
And he had health trouble joining the Air Force because the munitions factory was a bloody war effort joint.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to lose men.
Yeah.
And when he came out, he was at a loose end, which a lot of them were, but he was loose anyway at any
point. I can remember Mum saying to me that she made him leave the Air Force because he was drinking so much.
Yeah.
But she openly admitted that he loved it, and if she'd allowed him to stay, he would have risen through the ranks.
Yes.
He said he would probably be a group captain.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
But she did not want him to stay because the
biggest problem with the old man was he couldn't be with anyone without drinking a lot.
Mm.
It doesn't matter where you go, but when we were at Taradale, you probably don't remember, and we were playing, he was joined up at the cricket club.
Yes.
After the bloody game, the Antonios, the old man, the hell else, I'm trying to think, somebody else, the two Antonios, Dad,
down with me,
I'm trying to think who else, they troop off to Mumfrey, to the pub. Like, he'd take Mum and us three home, and if Dad dropped around the cows up, and if he got home, he'd milk them. It'd be a bullshit. Who milked them? Cold labour, all that happened these days.
No.
That's all bullshit, because that's probably why I'm still working, because I can't slow up. But, you know, honestly, when you think about it, how many times did he turn up when everything was done?
Oh,
yeah?
Right.
Like, on his way back, like, he...
Strathewan was no different.
No, that's right.
No, we all had to feed the children.
Yeah.
We had to
milk the cow before I went to school.
Yeah.
All these new places, he stuck it for 6 to 9 months.
Yeah.
Then he had to delve off into something else.
Yeah.
Is that what happened at Taradale?
He
was cutting firewood because there was nothing else.
I can remember Granny saying, your father has a wanderlust.
He just goes.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. She says, like a gypsy, he just goes.
Mm. That's it. Mm. And somehow or other, I know Mum put her foot down, I know that, and he had to find a job. And he got a job with the State Rivers, going around reading the water meters on the race between Marmfrey and Bendigo. But he also did out the other side too, because he was out at Bridgewater or somewhere sometimes.
Yeah.
But through going with the cricket, through going to the Marmsley pub, he got friendly with the publican, Jimmy Minahan.
Yes, I remember the name.
And when he sold out at Malmesbury and went to Lilydale, the old man
followed. Oh, that's where
that's how he had that accident.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mum reckoned I was stupid that night, but anyway. Mm. A-model four, and I could hear it.
Yeah. Back nothing. Down the hill.
Never turned up.
And when we went out,
Mum said, you couldn't have heard him right.
Yeah.
I said, I'm sure it was the A-model.
Then we went
I still remember bloody poor buddy.
Yeah.
Toby, was it Toby Cribbish?
Yes, I think it was.
Scoble. Toby Scoble. Came up home and said, I'm sorry, Pat, but your husband's been in an accident. Yeah. And Mum flew at him.
Yes, he did.
So I tried to get between them. She went right off. Wasn't his fault.
No, he was crook.
He was in hospital.
No, but did she think he was dead?
Toby told her. He's in hospital. He's okay. He knocked around, but he's okay. What's his name? Lived down the road. Toby, on his way home, went and seen Luke Nina.
Yes.
Luke Nina came up with his wife.
Yeah, I can't remember what her name was.
And they took Mum off. Luke took Mum off. His wife stayed with us and to see the old man. It must have only been there 10 or 12 minutes or something, I don't know, it wasn't long. And come home.
I must have gone and visited Dad at the hospital with
you
Mum.
You would have.
But I remember going to that hospital.
You remember his chest?
No.
Yeah, I do.
Black.
Black as that phone.
Yeah. No,
what? For the steel wheel. Oh, the bolt in the guts there.
Yeah.
That's how hard he hit.
He had an A model 4.
Yeah.
In those days, for the windscreen wiper, there was a lever.
Hand operated.
Yes.
Hand operated.
Yeah.
And that went through his head. He was told,
Well, the doctor said to him, an inch to the either to the right or left.
What did he run into? Bloody 48 Buick.
Yeah.
One of the solidest cars on the road. And all that saved him, actually, what's his name? So I found out later, Kev Solder told me, what's the copper's name at Marmbury? The copper told Kev that all it saved him was the age of the car.
Mm.
In the accident, the bloody bolts were rusted to bugger in that fin, it just snapped off.
Oh.
The body went backwards.
Yeah.
If that had been solid, he said he'd have been a dead man because he would have come straight through into the Buick. But anyway, that's another.
Well, it wasn't meant to be, was it?
No.
We've skipped the war years. How did he come to get into the Air Force?
I don't know. I got no idea.
I thought that was Uncle Jack, because I thought Uncle Jack was going with Auntie Vesta.
No, they never met until
Air Force.
The Air Force.
Oh.
The old man met him in the Air Force.
Right.
There was Dad and Uncle Jack and Uncle Lou caught him.
No, Uncle Lou, I won't say it.
You're being recorded.
He was there, but he was with the SEC.
Oh, okay.
Right, how... He wasn't in their side of it. He was in administration.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Jack Winray.
Yes.
There was two other guys.
Yeah.
They all met up.
Yeah.
And the old man, I can still remember the old man coming home and said, I found someone for my sister.
That was Uncle Jack.
And for some reason or other, they hit it off.
Did they ever?
Two totally different people.
Two right.
But they hit it off. Anyway, the old man done his views there. He found only best of a partner.
Anyway, Dad was friends with that Diamond Creek bloke too, which is Alice's father.
Who?
What, Alice's father's name, the bloke up Fitz Creek and Diamond Creek.
Yeah,
Alice?
No, LeGrandy.
Grandy.
Yeah, he was at the Bendigo Mines.
Oh, the mines.
Yeah.
I was talking to her one day and she said something about
during the during the Depression, he couldn't get work, so he went to Bendigo.
Yeah.
And I'm going, that's the time that your father would have been working in Bendigo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they working in the mines.
But that's where
when he came to Jack Ewan, he stopped at Diamond Creek Pub.
Oh, yeah, so I met up with
him. Like the pub got anything to do with everything.
He knew someone in every pub he went into.
That, going back to that business about the drinking, that didn't start in the Air Force.
It
was at Broken Hill.
Yes. Oh, okay.
The mine at Broken Hill.
Yes.
Because when those guys used to come out of the pit
yes.
in the afternoon, I think it was 3 or something like that,
scorching hot.
There would be 6 pots lined up for all the guys that were coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that one at St Andrews?
Oh, yeah.
10 pots in a row that the old man...
Yeah, that was 6 o'clock closing.
Yeah. 6 o'clock
closing. 6 o'clock closing the... Pub's closed at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, but there was a room out the back.
But you were supposed to be off the premises. You couldn't buy after 6 o'clock.
Yeah, that's right.
And the doors would be closed. The front doors.
But you had a quarter of an hour to drink them.
But you could order before then, and you were supposed to be out of off the premises by 6:15.
Yeah.
Well, that never happened.
Yeah.
But they'd have these. But the publican, if the publican was caught serving beer after 6 o'clock, he'd virtually be put out of business.
Yeah.
And so these guys used to order all these pots, not glasses, these great big 10-ounce things, and they'd have them there, and then they'd have to drink them all before they went home.
Yeah.
It was like trying to drink a keg of beer in 10 minutes.
The old man could drink it.
Oh, yeah, he could. Down it would go. I've seen him drink a 10-ounce pot of beer without stopping for a breath.
Wow.
No, it's just straight down, stuff it up the side.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, no guy from Melbourne, I'd love to have been there that night that he did that to them.
But
I reckon they would have thought, who the hell is this guy?
He offered.
He had 3 down while he didn't one down.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, about the night you left him there.
Won't go into all those stories while it's being recorded.
anyway,
story.
Where were we up to?
Well, about the war, because there's a question that I want to sort out. I understood that he got into the Air Force because he was a surveyor, and I understood that he used to fly in these Liberator bombers as a navigator.
Yes, he was.
But the Netter tells a different story.
I can't believe that, because I'm sure that on his uniform it had NAV.
Mm-hmm.
What's NAV?
Navigator.
David found something, didn't
you? Yeah, because he's a trainee pilot or something.
He was a flying officer.
Maybe.
And he was trained as a wireless air gunner before he went up to Darwin.
I can remember him talking.
And he got to Darwin just after the war.
Yeah.
After the Japanese surrender.
Yeah. Because
I can remember him talking about gunner training, and there was a guy on the plane who never missed. And I can remember Dad saying everybody had to have a go in the gun turret, because if you were in the gun turret and you're under fire and you got wounded, they'd pull you out and stick someone else in. So everyone had to do it. But there was this one guy who they would never let him go until the very last, because they used to go out to sea and drop smoke targets in the water, and then they'd see if they could shoot him up. And this fellow, he never missed. It was just a short burst, boom, and the smoke target would disappear. And they all tried to match him, but they couldn't. So he obviously did some of that.
Yeah. But he was definitely a navigator, because they got lost in a fog.
And what I found out was the air gunners often were the navigators as well.
Because this particular time, they were up in the Liberator, and they were flying up the valley.
Yes. They were in Victoria.
In Victoria.
Yes.
And the skipper threw a break in the fog.
Yeah.
Jesus! The old man said, "What's the matter? That funny hill's all round us." The old man said, "You're near such and such and such and such. fine! Buffalo, Hotham and all them places. They were flying up there. That bloody Liberator wasn't a small plane,
either.
Mum told me that when Dad was got to Darwin, they used to fly out over the ocean between there and Japan and look for Japanese submarines.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he never actually landed the plane overseas, he couldn't get
it. But he never, he was never in any conflict. That's his problem.
Right. No,
he had to land over, but you also had to be engaged in conflict, and all they were doing was surveillance at the time. He was never actually in conflict. But how he joined up, I've got no idea. Mm. All I do know is that the munitions factory, all his applications were no, because you are a dedicated, a protected industry. War effort.
Yeah.
People who are in that have got to stay in it because they haven't got time to train anybody.
It
was turning out bullets and
whatever,
shells or rockets or whatever. And all that
crap. I can remember in Mount Lebanon when Dad come home, I heard this car pull up, I heard it pull up, and we heard Dad calling out for Mum. And Mum opened the door and we got out of bed, or I know I did. Mum said, "You get back to bed," and anyway, he beat me. Peeking through the door, seeing Dad walk in the house with a white ring trench coat on, covered in blood. And Mum put him in the bedroom. Anyway, I can remember about 3 days later, I said, "Is Dad dead?" He said, "Why?" And I said, "Well, he's not here and he was covered in blood the other night." And Mum had to take me into the bedroom and show me Dad, and he was all bandaged up. Apparently it was over a bit that Dad would drink any drink they put on the bar, and somehow or other erupted into a fight.
That happened often, that sort of thing, because what about the story of the car disappearing in Canada? Went out with the car and came back without it.
Yeah.
And Mum never asked any questions.
And never went back to the tools.
Got no idea what happened with that.
Did you know that dressing cupboard, that cupboard with the writing
desk? That's how they come by the A-model.
Yes.
So what though?
That cupboard with the writing desk table on it. I remember going through there one day and I found all Dad's Air Force papers, and I wondered if anybody had them or whether Mum burnt them after Dad died. Mum burnt a lot of papers and Lynette was there and she told you said, "What are you doing?" And Mum said, "I'm burning papers that are no concern to us."
She burned the papers of when he had the accident in that little car down in the Preston Coburg. She burned all that. I remember that, but I don't know about all of that.
I didn't even know she had papers for that. I can remember when she had the accident at Taradale, the reams of paper Mum filled out for the bloody insurance, the sun free insurance thing, when you have accidents and that. I reckon Mum must have used about a mile of paper. Every time she sent something off, this had come back, and she'd be writing page after page, doctors would sign it all and all that, and it'd go back, and I don't know how much they got out of it. They wouldn't have got much. The effort that she put in, it was crap.
Anyway, there was Air Force papers in there, and I don't know if anybody got them or what.
Well, I'd never seen them.
I've still got the box of Mum stuff in the office there. I'll have to get it out and see what's actually in it, because it's 10 years now. I can't remember what's in
there.
No
idea.
Air Force stuff that Nana was burning at Kick Street, because I grabbed a couple of bits.
Did you?
Yeah. I've got his Malay dictionary.
Oh, okay.
And a couple of magazines and stuff.
Right. Oh, well, maybe she did burn them then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I know she gave us all her things.
I know, and I
grabbed them. Oh, thanks, statement.
That's good.
Oh, yeah. We took mum and burned them all, buddy. Page after page, I'm a bit like that. Stuff in the cupboard, it's a door, he let me. Get rid of the bloody stuff! You know, I have got every taxation docket I have ever got.
I know!
Me too!
Yeah, two of us!
We've got reams and reams of paper there.
No, got rid of all mine, I haven't kept any. Yeah. Rose has still got his first pay packet.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't?
I don't think I've got that, but I've got me first taxation. I've got all my taxation papers. If I ever get investigated by the taxation, they can go right back to 1953. Right through, they're all there. Goodness. All the statements and everything.
He doesn't believe in throwing anything.
No.
No. So what have you got of yours?
All my pay packets.
No, I haven't got them.
Yeah. No, I threw all mine out.
No.
I've
got my
kids
paid back. It's all.
I've
got my kids paid back.
Which one?
No, I'm
sure I've paid back.
What's there?
Burn them.
Yeah.
Make sure the money's out.
After we next got married, and I was home with mum and dad. Dad was cool.
20 years of business.
And Mum wasn't quite 60, and there was a lapse there of a few months where Dad was filling out a form trying to get a sickness benefit.
Yeah, that's right.
And Mum couldn't get anything. The only way she could get money was to go to work.
Yeah.
And I had to support them until Mum's pension came through.
Yeah.
And I was the only one that had a job, and I used to pay the bills until the pension
came. I didn't know you did that. There you go. I didn't know you did that.
I think it ended up costing me about $300 to $400, and when we got married, Mum said, did I want it back? And I said, no.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
fair enough.
I didn't know
you did
that.
Well, when they went to St Andrews, I gave them the money to Buddy build the house.
Yeah.
Mum paid it all back,
Mum was good at paying things back.
But what I could never understand, admittedly at Newport I wasn't old enough, but I could never understand why, when we left Taradale, why we didn't go to Castlemaine. Why we come down here.
Mount Evelyn.
Yeah, admittedly the old man had a job, but he could have got a job at bloody Castlemaine.
Maybe he knew too many people there.
He was getting into trouble, but what sort of trouble, we got no idea. Go back long before that, Norseman. Mum came back to Bendigo because of him.
Because she was sick with him.
With you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And as soon as you were born, they were going back.
Yeah.
We were going back. I mean, I was with Mum.
Yeah.
She obviously and had a great deal of trouble during pregnancies, because Mum told me that she had a miscarriage between you.
Yeah, that's right. But the other thing,
I would never have been.
He was even lucky to be pregnant with any one of us after what happened when he had Morris.
She almost died because one doctor saved her life.
Oh, okay.
The guy at bloody Broken Hill.
She'd
have been in Bendigo, she probably wouldn't have lived.
That's right.
When Morris was born, the midwife was that army nurse, Bullock, was it? Nurse that was a hero
in the war. But they were struggling to try and save the two of them until this doctor walked in. This is the story Mum told me, that this doctor walked in and they said to him, we've got problems here. And he came in and had a look, and he literally pulled you out.
That's what Mum told me. He said, you fucking nearly killed me.
That's the only thing they could do, and they both lived. Yeah. It's amazing. But for that time, he still lived.
But I think a lot of that you got to put down to the way Mum was built too.
I know, she was tiny.
Yeah, but she obviously was a breeding person.
Yeah, that's true.
Because if she wasn't a breeding person, I would have died. It's as simple as that.
She was a prem baby.
She was a prem baby.
Yeah, but how prem, does anyone know how prem she was?
I can't.
I don't know, but she was
we do
prem
not know, but all that I can, the story I heard from someone, I don't know whether it was Mum or whether it was Auntie Ed, told us one time, that the family were told the baby's alive, but for how long we don't know.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Pascoe, it was, Auntie's mum, she said that Mum's grandfather, I don't know who he was, I've got no idea.
Yeah, no, I don't
know. I don't know whether he was a Robert or whether he was a Kale.
I think he might have been a Kale.
He was walking up. Myrtle Street.
Yeah.
It was Myrtle Street those days. And he stopped to talk to one of his mates and said, "Oh, what are you doing up here?" He says, "Oh, I've come to see my granddaughter. They said mightn't live." And this old bloke said to him, "Well, that's the baby you can hear now." He said, "That's so she'll bloody live. No problems there."
Yeah,
that's
exactly right.
And Mum also told me that when she was carrying me at Taradale, one day I did a complete somersault inside her and Mum was knocked out with the pain. And when she come fooling, it was at the table spooning sugar into a cup of drink. And you know, Michelle did the same thing to me. One day she did this somersault thing and I had to go and lie on the bed and it turned out that we were both Rh negative babies and we must have been fighting.
Well, I know that when she was carrying you, she had to, Mum had to be actually stitched up to carry Kathy, otherwise she would have lost her. Yeah, she was stitched up. So that always amuses me, that method that they use, because you know how some babies are born very quickly.
Yeah.
If you're all stitched up, but if you're all stitched up, you know, and this baby wants to arrive quickly, by gear, it could be a disaster, couldn't it?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, we were living at Taradale and she had to go to Bendigo.
Yeah, and the nearest person were two old ladies that were 70-something at the time.
Yeah.
But the old bloke that was 80,
Well, from memory, when Mum knew Kathy was coming, she had to walk down the hill to these people.
Yeah, that's right. She used to. She used to, because she would sometimes be there when we'd come home from school.
Yeah.
And we'd walk home with her.
No telephones or anything.
No.
No, that's right.
And what about when we used to walk up the driveway? Mum's reading the book. She's got to be reading the book.
Yes.
Takes the burden, walk in the dining room. Most of it. Mum! Oh! There was only once that we didn't have to eat them.
Yeah.
That was funny. Black, they went to the pig. Otherwise, we ate them.
She did that all her life.
Well, before Timothy was born, Mum came over to Wodonga and stayed because I was in and out. And we were in the middle of our meeting because I don't know whether you came to Wodonga, but the wall of the platform...
Back wall.
The back wall of the platform was the wall of our kitchen...
Kitchen and lounge room.
..and second bedroom. And Mum was sitting in the kitchen reading, and everything was quiet in this meeting. I don't know whether we were having a sermon or whether we were praying or what. And you know how Mum used to be?
If you're reading a woman's hearing,
And we were all sitting there. You
would have gone right through the joint.
Absolutely. So everybody had a good laugh.
They would.
She was supposed to be going home on the train on, I think it was a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And Russell was going to a rotary thing and she stayed overnight. Well, I went into hospital. During the night, I was in labour and he wasn't home. And he eventually came home. Well, my water broke, but I started vomiting. So Russ and I go, and Mum, she puts, you know, her overcoat over her nighty. She's got the bucket, and she says, "You're not leaving me home. I'm coming with you. I'll carry the bucket."
Fair enough.
That laugh was amazing, a lot of places, because I remember when she ended up going to Golden Oaks, even the people there, because a lot of them that had Alzheimer's or whatever, but they used to say, it's amazing to hear someone laugh like that and know that it was a happy laugh.
That's
and
right.
They really loved it.
Yeah.
Because they knew she was happy.
Yeah.
Enjoying herself. Yeah, it was interesting.
I mean,
but it used to carry.
She sure did. Exactly. But the thing is that she could see fun in what we just thought was a bit of a joke or whatever. She could actually make something out of it. Yeah. And like you'd read it, and Mum would read the same thing. Go right off. What the hell? What are you doing?
She used to read those Mills and Boone.
Yeah.
Her head off because she'd be laughing at all the sex stuff that was going on.
Yeah, that's it.
Kill yourself.
But I used to read Mills and Boone.
Yeah, I know you did.
Yeah.
I used to too,
although
I never used to laugh like Mum did.
No, but I'd laugh sometimes, but you know, people used to say to me, "Oh, why the hell do you read them?" I said, "Well, it's one way of forgetting about all your troubles." These stupid people have got, you know, way some stories are written, like writers.
Yeah.
Like Essie Summers.
Why
do you love them for?
Well, she wrote from New Zealand.
Yes.
It's as though you were there.
Yeah, that's right. And well, I could read Essie Summers.
Yeah.
And I could picture where
she was.
Exactly.
And what
I liked about the Mills and Boones was you could actually read them in a day.
Yeah, that's right.
You didn't have time to sit down and read a big thick novel, but you had time to read a Mills and Boones.
But they used to condense a lot of it. There's no doubt about that.
Did you sing the one to us of the six of you at the cemetery? Because your mother doesn't remember sending it to us.
I don't know.
We thought it was Dave.
Yes,
I
do.
Yes, turn that thing off.
So we